It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
I hate him. He's cuckoo for copocuffs.
Potter Day. It's the end. The end of Harry Potter.
This is it.
This is it. Yay. And you're listening to Film Sociology, a radio talk show here on WFYI HD to the point, and your ears are not deceiving you. Matthew Soze is once again on assignment.
He gone.
And incommunicado. The Film Yap crew once again has come through to take over.
Absolutely. It is Film Yap Radio. Film Sociology's no more.
Well, it will be again next week, but yeah, this week...
Not for another 59 minutes or so.
And I'm I'm Christopher Lloyd.
I am Joe Shear.
And I am Sam Watermeyer.
And so it's like a two-and-a-half, two-and-three-quarters Film Yap crew. Sam is also here representing Nouveau Newsweekly, in that he has, I believe, the co-author of this week's cover story on Indianapolis International Film Festival.
That is correct.
Congratulations on that. Very, very. You're what, 19 years old?
20.
Hit
close.
20.
Yeah.
He hit 20, and he's writing cover stories.
That's right.
I think when I was 20, I was playing Donkey Kong, and that was about it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm still playing Donkey Kong.
I play it in between writing stories. So.
Well, good. Yeah, a lot of coverage all over the place. Nouveau, I think, did a really good job with covering it. I saw Red Lou Harry's coverage in IBJ.
Yep.
The Indianapolis Star had something, I think.
Yeah.
You, I think, had something, didn't you?
I did not for the Star. I had something.
You had something else.
I had something for Harry Potter.
There you go.
And of course, we have the best IIFF coverage in the world.
Yes, as we have every year.
Come on, quit laughing, man.
Joe and I have made it our mission to, with our fellow yappers, have the most comprehensive film festival coverage of both IIFF, or Indie Film Fest, as most people call it, and Heartland Film Festival. And I think we've done it again this year. Mm-hmm. Do we have a final number of how many movies we've actually got reviews up right now? I did 19 on my own. Uh-huh. So
I think I want to say we're around 40, 45 or so right now, and that's including some shorts. And,
yeah.
And I still have a couple of shorts.
I think we've got some I think you had an interview with one of the filmmakers.
I've had a couple. One is not quite ready to be posted yet, but will be very soon. We've got several interviews as we have in past years, so we're rolling along, and we might even add some more interviews before the festival's over.
Yep, and that's started officially last night with just the opening night film, Another Earth.
Mm-hmm. Which Sam went to again for a second time after reviewing it.
Yes, and Sam, if you read Sam's review on the film, he was very much a big fan of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you went again. So tell us about the pomp and circumstance of the first night of Indie Film Fest 11.
It was pretty exciting. It drew a good crowd. Everyone seemed excited and thankfully pleased with Another Earth. Really impressive movie to open the festival. It's really great sci-fi drama. So I think it went really well.
Now, is this like Star Trek kind of sci-fi, or is this more the more grounded kind of reality-based sci-fi stuff?
It's definitely the latter. This isn't a sci-fi spectacle in the vein of Transformers or Star Trek. It's more about the human characters and, you know, much more of a character drama. Having said that, it does have some impressive visuals, though.
All right. We should mention, we teased you with starting with Harry Potter, but we're actually going to delay our Harry Potter review just a little bit because we've got a special guest star who's going to be arriving a little bit later to help us talk about Harry Potter. So... We'll spend the first few minutes of this show talking about Indie Film Fest. Now, we should mention, in the interest of full disclosure, that both Joe and I were jury members for the film festival. Joe with the narrative feature film category, kind of the main category, and I on the documentaries. And I actually enjoyed the documentary. I've been on the feature film category, I think, the last 2 or 3 years, and it was nice to, because I enjoy the documentaries, especially as I get older in life and more mature. I don't know. I just find myself having a craving for more of that stuff. So, Joe, do you want to talk about just a few of your films? Maybe not necessarily your favorites, but just the more notables.
There's several. Of course, if you want to talk about in terms of actual star power, there's The Perfect Host, stars David Hyde Pierce of Frasier fame. It's sort of a different role for him. Kind of a neat little thriller. I would give that a recommendation. It's worth checking out. One that I actually liked a lot called Natural Selection was very good. It has just a couple of people you might recognize. John Grise would be probably the most notable. That's Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite.
I'm sitting over here laughing, thinking of like watching a trailer for this and like, you know, neat little thriller, Joe Shearer.
it's a neat little, that's going to be the tagline. I actually talked to them. We're getting that on the poster. Neat little thriller. It's very good, actually. It's sort of a about a conservative Christian woman who has to do lots of strange things that force her to act out of character, mostly involving her husband and the things her husband will not do for her, but will do by himself at a sperm bank. And she ends up having to go off on some little adventure to fulfill his what may or may not be his dying wish. I don't want to get too much into spoilers, but a very good movie, and definitely check that one out. There's a bunch, there's several that are worth seeing. Conception is a good one, kind of a comedy, on the same topic in a way. A Bag of Hammers is a pretty good film. It's kind of up and down. Jess and Moss is visually a very, very nice looking film. So if you're looking for some features, there's a lot worth seeing.
Well, really, that's interesting. So I would say of the ones I saw this year, and they've all been the documentaries, I'll mention one short and then several of the features. One short that really stood out for me was called Statesman, because it had an Indiana tie-in. Of course, I always like to highlight those. And it's just I think it was about a 25-minute film. By the way, the definition of short film in the documentary category ranged literally from 3 minutes up to like 45 minutes.
Nice.
The one called Statesman, it was portraits of three different men, all like working class guys. Nothing tied them together in any way other than there was a continuity of names. I think their names were Donnie, Mike, and Don Mike. And like one guy is just an old guy who lives in a trailer and his entire existence seems to be waiting for birds to come to the bird feeder. Or if it's squirrels, then he shoots them. One guy was a one-man fishing excursion operation. And the one that was closest to my heart was a guy who was a 60-year-old paperboy, I think, for the Madison Chronicle in Madison, Indiana.
Yeah.
He's been doing it for like 18 years. I don't think he's ever missed a day. He had a day about 12 years ago where he had a stroke. But he woke up in the hospital with wires sticking out of him, and they said, "You had a stroke." He says, "That's great, but I got to go finish my paper out." And that's just a really fun, really nice portraiture just for the sake of portraiture. Statesman was the name of that one.
All right.
And three or four that stood out from the feature film categories, there was The Green Wave, which Joe and I were discussing the other day, is thematically kind of similar to Persepolis, movie from a few years ago. It's a documentary film as opposed to a narrative film that was sort of a recollection. And that's also about Iran, specifically about the Green Revolution of 2009, where a lot of young people rose up. And it's told through live interviews with some of those people, some reenactments, and some other things. And the reenactments are all done in animation. So that was really powerful. There was Cinema Comunista, which was a look at the state-run propaganda film industry of Yugoslavia, a country that was created out of the air in 1945, lasted until 1991, and the fall of the Berlin Wall. And once the Berlin Wall was down, they all decided to try and kill each other. But in the meantime, they made all sorts of movies, and they literally almost didn't know how to run a camera when they first started.
Wow.
And developed and got more interesting. to the point where, like, in the 60s, they were bringing in people like Orson Welles and Yul Brynner and all sorts of Hollywood people to make movies with them. And one of them even, I think, got an Oscar nomination for Best Foreign Language Film. So Cinema Comunista was the name of that one. Summer Pasture. That's what I call a very pure sort of documentary, in that it's really just, like, takes you into a world that you've never seen or experienced before. In this case, literally, you know, people, nomads living, I think, in Tibet, living straight out of the 10th or 11th century, and just what their lives are like out there, where it seems like in most every way their ecosystem revolves around sheep dung. Because obviously they tend the sheep, and then the sheep make their dung, and they use the dung to heat themselves, you know, they dry it out in the opening sequence, which you will not forget, of how exactly you take piles of sheep poop and turn it into a burnable form. So that was one good, really good one, Summer Pasture. And the one that really stood out for me, because people who know me know I'm a car guy and I'm into all that sort of stuff, is The Boys of Bonneville Racing on a Ribbon of Salt, which is a look at the Utah Salt Flats, where people go out there to do all this high-speed racing. And it's the story of a particular guy who essentially invented this whole subset of racing and essentially discovered the Salt Flats and turned it into a venue for racing. Ab Jenkins is his name. Mm-hmm. And it's all about him and then his son and what happens to his most famous car. Just a really thrilling portrait of a sport in its early days, Boys of Bonneville.
Okay.
And Sam, I think you had a few more you wanted to add as well, isn't that right?
Yeah, in terms of the documentaries, the one that really stood out for me was Shut Up, Little Man. It's about these two guys who recorded their neighbors' drunken arguments in the 1980s. They lived in San Francisco next to these two old guys who were basically like the odd couple on steroids. You know, you can't really blame them for eavesdropping on these guys. You know, they were constantly yelling at each other, and eventually... the subjects of this documentary, Eddie Lee Sausage and Mitchell D, played these tapes for their friends, and the tapes leaked out into the public, kind of like a YouTube sensation. So that was a really interesting documentary. It draws comparisons between these.
Yeah. Eddie Lee Sausage. I love that name, by the way. I just had to.
Yeah. It's interesting name. I'm not even sure if it's real. I want to believe that that's his real name. But anyway, these arguments that these old guys have that Eddie Lee Sausage and his friend recorded. The movie draws comparisons between those recordings and like celebrity rants that you hear on YouTube, like the Christian Bale rant and Mel Gibson and stuff like that. So it's a very timely, you know, relevant documentary. And that was probably my favorite out of all the films I've seen, really.
Okay. So. What about world cinema? Did you see any of those? Any of those stand out for you?
No, I actually didn't see any of those. I don't think I did. In terms of the features, another one that stood out was Small Town Murder Songs.
Yeah.
Kind of a rural noir in the vein of Winter's Bone or even Fargo. That's about a policeman in a small Ontario town investigating a murder. That's really interesting, well-acted movie, very realistic, but at the same time it kind of has this dreamlike quality, kind of evocative of Twin Peaks or something like that. So that one stood out for me too.
I do want to say, mentioning the shorts, I didn't get to any of the shorts from the American Spectrum category. Something Left, Something Taken was a very good one. An animated short about two people who are visiting San Francisco and think they're about to be murdered by the Zodiac Killer. So they use their knowledge they gleaned from watching shows like CSI and are trying to preemptively get this guy captured before they even are killed. It's a cute little film, but it's very educational. There's another one. Speaking of celebrity connections, Brian Austin Green does a short called Turning Japanese, which is kind of cute. It kind of runs out of gas, I think, but it's very funny at points, and it's about a couple who are in financial trouble, so they hire a boarder. They bring in a boarder, someone to help with the rent, and find out she's kind of got an unusual sleepwalking habit. Especially when she watches Japanese programming, either films or television shows, she reenacts them as if she's Japanese, hence the name.
And it's totally politically correct.
Yeah, there's this little they start like charging admission, and then there's some very tawdry things that start going on between Brian Austin Green's wife and this woman as a result of all this, and it's very strange. And it, you know, it's very funny at points, so it's worth catching if
strange
you
strange yet cute.
Strange yet cute, yes. And I would even say the word sexy is one of the terms I use to describe it.
And does anyone remember what year this is for Indie Film Fest?
I think I believe this is 2011.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Yes.
And for everyone else, it's also 2011.
Yeah, for most of us anyway.
How many years has the Indie Film Fest gone on? I want to say this is about the eighth year. Does that sound about right?
That sounds
right. I'm on the internet. I'm looking.
Well, we should mention, I think this is the second year that all of Indie Film Fest is taking place in one location, which is the Indianapolis Museum of Art, the Toby Theater, and they also have a couple of other screening rooms as well. So a great venue, obviously. And Joe and I were talking about, isn't it great to go to a film festival and everything's all in one place? Mm-hmm. You don't have to drive around or wonder which theaters, you know. And I remember in past years, literally they've had to... like take the disc or print of a film, and you know, from one theater and get in a car and drive it to another theater because they had it at the wrong theater.
Yeah.
And boy, that's just not the way to do it. Unfortunately, that's the way a lot of film festivals, in fact, play out. Mm-hmm. But I really like having it there. And so, I think in addition to their website, isn't it just indiefilmfest.org is their
yep.
website? I think if you actually go on the IMA's website, they also have their own listings, and it's very, I have to say, it's very well done. It's very clean information and trailers embedded for just about every single one. So, and we should mention Indie Film Fest going July 14th
yep.
to the 24th, which is to say last night. Today is really the first day that it's ramping up to a full schedule. So if you're listening to this and saying, July 14th, I missed the first date, and it was just the one film.
Yeah.
Today we've got a whole bunch of movies playing, whole bunch of other movies playing every day through Sunday the 24th.
Yeah, and Another Earth is getting a theatrical release too. So if you missed it last night, you'll definitely have a chance to see it again. But it, the IMA, the Toby, and you know all those the theaters, a very good place to see a movie. And it's got a great film festival vibe too from being there. So it's definitely worth checking out. Also, to pimp our own involvement again, we will be there on Sunday during the critics panel. That's 3 o'clock at the the multi-purpose room.
Yeah, just go to the IMA and ask for that. They have different panels all through the event. I believe starting Saturday the 16th.
Yep.
And just to mention the titles of a few of them, from Vapor to Paper, Constructing Your Screenplay. That's by our friend Kate Chaplin.
Yeah.
Another one on the role of the director. The ins and outs of producing. The title of that is Spielberg's Got Nothing on You. Okay, maybe he has a little bit on you.
Yeah.
One with Meet the Filmmakers, always a very popular event. That's right before ours at 1 p.m. on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And usually a bunch of them end up trickling over into our thing, mainly to throw refuse at us because we've said, in some cases, not glowing things about their movies.
Yeah.
But, the Indie Film Fest, I know if you're out there sitting listening to this and you're saying, oh, I don't go to film festivals, I'm not that type of guy, you really should go because you'll discover things that you're just not going to see in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
But what more so is you may have a chance to see a movie now that actually will end up in theaters. Like you just mentioned, Another Earth is getting a theatrical release. Also, next week, a film that played at Indie Film Fest last year, A Little Help with Jenna Fisher, written, directed by Michael T. Whitehorn. That is getting a theatrical release. So Joe and I have mentioned a great, great documentary from about 3 or 4 years ago, The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters,
yeah.
Honestly, one of the best documentaries I've seen in the last decade. Mm-hmm. I saw it at, you know, Indie Film Fest a year before anyone was talking about it. So
you liked it before it was cool.
I liked it was before it was cool.
Absolutely.
So Indie Film Fest, go see it. Why don't we take a little break, and then we'll be back with our magical Harry Potter review.
I hope you like that little musical interlude. It is, and now let's get to the featured portion of the show. The big release of the week, arguably of the summer, is out, and this is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Can we call it Part 2?
Part 2.
Yeah. Harry has a bow and arrow with a chicken instead of an actual arrow.
Yes, if you can believe it, the eighth film, mm-hmm. 10 years, the first one, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone,
yeah.
2001.
Depending on what country you live in.
Yeah, I think it was Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone if you were in England. But pretty amazing. And we have with us a special guest star / commentator. Is
Bianca
that right?
Dreyer's in the house.
Oh, I thought my name was Girlfriend Bianca.
Oh, man.
Kobe did refer to Chris as Girlfriend Bianca when he said, oh, who's coming in? He says, Girlfriend Bianca. Which Chris, of course, right away just kicked him right under the bus.
Yep. That's how that works.
So tell us a little bit about your history, your own familiarity with the books and the movies. And...
Well, I've only read the first book, so I guess I kind of offer a different perspective in the sense that I've only seen the movies. So for me, this last one, I don't really know what's going to happen. I've heard people tell me what's going to happen, and I've seen, like, spoilers and stuff, which really angers me. But for this last one, I'm, like, really excited because I really don't know who's going to die, anything like that. But I have been following Harry Potter since the beginning, so I have grown up with, like, the kids. And, you know, every time a new one came out, you'd see, oh, my gosh, Harry looks older in this one, or, oh, his voice got deeper. So.
And that's the thing, like, for, like, people our age, like, this is our, like, I guess, late childhood. This is our teen years and stuff, like, all coming to an end here with this movie, with the whole Harry Potter series.
Yeah. Can we call this, I don't know, what is it, the Gen Y? Would it be the Gen Y Star Wars?
Maybe.
Yeah.
The millennial Star Wars?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think it's probably pretty close to that. In terms of number of films and, you know, it's probably... surpass Star Wars, you know, in terms of,
oh yeah,
you know, it's, I don't know about its cultural significance, because Star Wars, I don't know, it's pretty, that's right up there, but it's pretty big, and it's I know there's a lot of talk of people saying my childhood is officially over. I've seen that on more than one post, you know, with the end of the series. But let's get into the review. We're going to listen to a little bit first. Hopefully there'll be a little more dialogue than say the Transformers one from a couple weeks back.
All right, here we are.
Be safe. Be strong.
Find out where he is. find him, we can end this.
Where should we jump now?
I want to send. Man the boundaries, protect us.
I have to go back, haven't I?
It's a suicide mission. The boy who lived. Come to die.
Tell them how it happened that night. How you looked him in the eye. A man who trusted you. And killed him.
I never wanted any of you to die for me. You'll stay with me.
Always.
Until the end. Come on, Tom. Let's finish this the way we started.
Together!
Only I can live forever.
All right. Well, let's in the interest of full disclosure, we've established while we were off air here that Chris is the only person who's actually seen this movie. I had better things to do with my Tuesday night, which was actually important stuff. So Chris, how does this end? Is it awesome? Is it the coolest thing ever?
I don't know if it's the coolest thing ever. I'm not going to put it up there with like the Lord of the Rings finale, but it was for me.
You mean all of them?
Well, in that case, maybe when you see Harry Potter, you'll because there's some similarities there, shall we say.
Okay.
I have been up and down on the Harry Potter movies. I really liked the first two or three. By the third or fourth one, I was like, I've seen this movie already. Mm-hmm. And it was so repetitious. It was just, it's another year at Hogwarts. There's a new dark arts professor. Harry or Hermione or somebody has acquired some new magic trinket. There's some nefarious threat that's building that will ultimately reveal to be Voldemort or one of his henchmen. I mean, it was just like, I've seen this movie. They kind of gained some steam, I think, around number six or so. And certainly number seven. And for my money, this was definitely the best Harry Potter movie.
Okay.
Just because it's a very well done, very emotional, riveting, action-filled movie. I think the shortest Harry Potter movie, just over like 2 hours, 10 minutes, I think I clocked it at. And you no longer feel the filmmakers holding you back and stringing you along of like, well, we've got some other mythology to introduce. We've got some other characters who are going to come. It's like, no, the table is now fully set, and it's time to feast. and there are some terrific action sequences in this. Obviously, the big showdown between Voldemort and Harry Potter, which I won't tell you anything more about other than it is awesome. There's a chase through the bank of the Wizarding World. There, his name escapes me at the moment, but it's like a chase through this big maze, and they're being pursued by these serpents of flame plus some Death Eaters, and wow, just really good stuff. But for me, I think the segment that just really made me sit back and go wow was a fairly lengthy sequence where you get to go into the mind of a character who has heretofore been quite a bit of a mystery, and you learn all about him or her, not going to say who, and what their motivations have been, because they've been all over the map in terms of the movies. You know, sometimes they seem like a good character, sometimes they seem like a villain, and I just loved that journey. I loved having so many answers, questions. I mean, it's great to be strung along for a while and be teased and set up, but you know, you want the resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this was sort of like the ending of the TV show Lost that I never got. You know, they actually tie up all the ribbons into a bow here. Everything is laid out, and there's no mysteries left. It's all done, and it's done very well. And really, I'm prepared to say, one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Okay, now, so this is part two of the last book.
The last book, Deathly Hallows, which was, I think, the longest book in the series, which, you know, I think she started out like 400 for the first one. They just got longer and longer. Yeah. I think the last one, she was up to like close to 1,000 pages, wasn't it? Yeah. It was
something.
It was up there. Yeah. And they made the decision to split it into just because, so you got about 4.5 hours, I think, combined. And I'm sure even then they probably lost a lot of narrative. I heard some people talking after the screening about, like, well, they didn't show this and they didn't show that from the book.
Is it a good pickup from the first part?
It is, although I would recommend, you know, it's been, what, 8 months since the last one came out. And I'll say for me, I have not read the books. I was not remembering too well exactly where we were in the story. I remember they were, you know, they essentially were on the run and in exile. But other than that, I didn't have a clear picture. So if you have the time, if you're not going to like a show tonight, maybe rent part one and refresh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Bianca, you got out of line for your tickets for Harry Potter tonight. What are you looking forward to?
Tonight, honestly.
Oh, you weren't in line? I thought you were waiting in line for tickets.
Oh no, Cody, you got some online.
Oh,
we got tickets.
I thought you were going. You mean you didn't camp out for your girl?
No. No.
Fandango, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, I called. I called.
Well, that's something.
Yes. Yes.
Honestly, the biggest thing I'm looking forward to seeing, and I guess it's because I'm a girl, I'm looking forward to seeing, like, the love stories between Ron and Hermione. Like, okay, how does that end up? Or between Ginny and Harry, how does that end up? That I'm kind of looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward, because I do kind of have a feeling that Harry will kill Voldemort, and seeing that.
Yeah, I will say, I think that Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort has just been an absolutely smashingly successful cinematic villain. Do I have it right that we actually saw him for the first time? Was it the third or fourth movie? Somewhere in there. But it was about midway, you know, a little past.
I think it was in the Goblet of Fire. I think that was the
fourth one. Yeah. So halfway through the series, we see
full-bodied.
Yeah. We saw.
Not just like.
Not
well,
you
saw
it
on the back of a head.
Well, you saw his face done by a different actor, I should say, as well. Mm-hmm. And boy, I mean, first of all, that look that they did with him, which I finally figured out how they did it. That was not makeup. They put like the bone white makeup on him, and he was wearing, you know, those little dots that they do for the CGI recording.
Yeah.
And then they just, you know, flattened and, you know, did all those things with his face and essentially what looks like took away his nose. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I mean, he was just genuinely creepy and forbidding. And you see something from Voldemort in this movie that I don't think you've seen before, and that is fear. Because at this point, you know, he's on to Harry and Hermione and Ron. He knows what they're doing in terms of hunting the Horcruxes where he's put his soul. And you see these moments where, you know, he's enraged, but he's also afraid. And for me, that just made the character even more, you know, intimidating. The fact that he's backed into a corner now, so you know that he will stop at nothing.
All right.
Well, I think not too much of a... guess about what our review is of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Yes!
All right, well, let's move on a different note. Also coming out this weekend, a bit of counter-programming, Winnie the Pooh.
Yes, yes. And I did see this. That is not what I was doing instead of watching Harry Potter, although I may have chosen that over the two. This is Winnie the Pooh. This is nothing... you know, there's nothing special. There's not, you know, Winnie the Pooh does not put on a backwards baseball cap and start singing Beyonce songs. They don't bother updating him, and they don't really need to. You know, he's Winnie the Pooh. He's targeted toward what, you know, the maybe 6-year-old crowd. I had my kids there watching it. It's a very brisk 68 minutes as opposed to the, what, 914 of Harry Potter this time.
130.
Okay, it was manageable. You know, I hate to throw the C word out. It was a cute movie. It was, if anybody knows.
Time you've used that word this afternoon.
Yep,
so.
Yeah. It's I hate that terminology usually as a describing an animated film, but that's what it was. You know, it was so adorable. It was just the standard, you know, Winnie the Pooh and his friends wander through the 100-acre wood and they lose Eeyore's tail, and they start imagining some monster, and there's, you know, just, you know, silliness, family friendly silliness. It's like an old, you know, wonderful warm hug, you know, from an old friend. You're just revisiting these things, and no one over 10 years old, I would imagine, is going to care too much about seeing it, unless they are grown and have children my kid's age. But if you have kids that age, and or heck, you just like Winnie the Pooh, why not go see it? It's definitely worth seeing. I gave it 4 yaps out of 5. That's a lot of yaps. Those are solid yaps too.
Is it just Winnie the Pooh, or is it Winnie the Pooh?
It's the whole gang. It's Tigger and
well,
Eeyore
like, no,
and
title.
Rabbit. The title is simply Winnie the Pooh.
Oh.
Yeah.
If I've got it right, this is a didn't Disney acquire the right to the character? And I don't know if they. I don't think Disney produced this film, but they're releasing it. Is that right?
Is that right?
I saw Disney on the trailer.
Okay, yeah. They have the.
I think we do have an audio clip for this. I would like to get some audio flavor of Winnie the Pooh.
Absolutely.
All right, here we are.
I can see you're going to be rather feisty today.
I am known for my inspiring rhetoric.
A simple hello would do. Thank you very much.
There they are.
Christopher Robin!
I walked across an empty land. I knew the pathway like the back of my hand.
We will have a contest to find a new tale for Eeyore.
Well, the thing to do is issue a reward.
Hold on tight.
I beg your pardon?
You sneezed.
No, I didn't. The word is issue, not at you.
You must be catching a cold.
I'll probably catch it too.
Oh, bother. Perhaps I could borrow some honey. Oh, just a taste, or a small lick, I should think.
Silly old bear.
I was watching the trailer for this, and I'm with you, Joe. I'm glad they didn't update him and stuff. And, like, even the animation is not updated. It's still, you know, it looks like the old... You know,
yeah. You know, if there was any updating at all, there's a short little live action sequence at the beginning, kind of establishing that we're going into the actual book, and the movie plays as if we're being read a book, to the point where at a couple of points, the characters Pooh especially kind of wander out of the illustrations and into the text of the book, and they interact at times. They like. He falls over and kind of pulls a sentence or two down with him, so the letters all fall in a jumble. You know, it's a neat little, it's a neat little,
a neat little
gimmick. It's a neat little thriller.
It's cute.
And let me also mention, speaking of cute, Zooey Deschanel does the music for it, this film. She sings several songs throughout. And there's also a another familiar voice that I picked out. The gentleman who plays Eeyore, I don't know his name. He also... he sounds suspiciously like the government agent from The Incredibles that continually bails out Bob Parr when he beats up his boss.
Mm.
So that was
web-based research on that.
Yeah, that was a nice that was a nice familiar touch.
Were any Heffalumps and Woozles in this one?
No, but there was a Baksoon monster, which is the big monster that they're trying to rescue Christopher Robin from, because he leaves a note saying. Back soon, and they assume it's a monster. And in that vein, also, if you do go see this movie, sit through the very nice closing credits, and you'll get a little cookie, as you say, Chris, at the end, which a lot of people at my screening missed, of course. But it's definitely a highlight. It's a nice little one.
Yes, we hate people who get up right when the credits roll because they want to get out of the parking lot first.
Yep. And so be patient. Sit there and look at the names of the people who worked very hard so that you can sit in the theater and watch this movie.
All right, so what'd you think of Pooh, Joe?
What did we think, Kobe?
I think we thought...
Now that was a good movie!
That was a good movie.
That sounds good to me.
Okay.
All right, we've got one other movie we're reviewing this week. We are not going to review the new Sarah Palin documentary. Isn't that called The Undefeated?
The Undefeated. Which...
Just because they didn't screen it for anybody.
Uh-huh.
I'll just say my two bits about that sort of thing is, you know, I'm not into... I mean, to me, it's like, you know, we have all these very opinionated documentaries now. You know, it's the age of Michael Moore. People don't want to explore a subject. They want to tell you what you think, what they think.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the solution to that is we don't need to replace left-wing diatribes with right-wing diatribes.
Mm-hmm.
How about just no diatribes?
Yeah.
And if people want to write, you know, have a cinematic op-ed, then just don't.
Just
if you want to have an op-ed, write an op-ed.
Yeah.
That's my take on The Undefeated. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there's some people who are interested in politics and are Sarah Palin fans. We'll go out to see it. I will not be with you.
Yeah, it's playing a few places around town, and yeah, I'll be in line with you not seeing this one. So.
Yes. But the one we do want to talk about is A Better Life, and this is a small drama. I you know, probably they made it for probably $5 million or less. It's got the filmmaker is well known as Chris Weitz. Is it Weitz or Weitz?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
It's probably Weitz.
Yeah.
But he made About a Boy, and he made...
Didn't he make the American Pie movies, or he and his brother?
Yeah, I think that's right. And then didn't he make one of the I'm trying to think. Did he make one of the Twilight movies? I think he directed the second Twilight movie.
Did he?
I think so.
I know he did a what was the movie called? American Dreams. About it's kind of an American. It was not a very good movie.
Right.
It was kind of an American Idol-ish kind of movie, and I think Mandy Moore was in it. Not very forgettable.
Yeah.
But About a Boy, of course, is very good. So.
Well, this one is a quintessentially American story. It's about a father who's a single dad living in L.A. and he's a gardener. He's he works his tail off, dawn till dusk. It was 7 days a week. Now it's 6 days a week because he finally decided he had to take one day off a week to spend some time with his son,
mm-hmm.
who's 15 years old and getting involved with, you know, not involved with gangs, but he's being tempted by gangs. And he wants to, you know, move up, get a better job, make more money, get a house in a better neighborhood so his kid can go to a better school and escape all this. So like I say, it's a quintessentially American story with the caveat is that he's not an American. He's an illegal immigrant or undocumented alien or whatever term you prefer. Who's living in L.A. His name is Carlos Galinda. He's played by a wonderful Mexican actor who I'm going to attempt his name here, but I'll probably butcher it. Demian Bichir, I think is how it's pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a wonderfully moving story. The film is not, in fact, an op-ed. It's not about the immigration issue per se. It's more about the human impact of what the situation we are in terms of our, you know, lack of enforcement. And just where we are and how this impacts real people. And it's very much a, if you've ever seen the classic Italian film, The Bicycle Thief,
mm-hmm.
It's the first half to two thirds of it is very much modeled on that story in that the setup is that he buys a truck from his bosses decide to leave the country and go back to Mexico. He buys his truck and business, after borrowing a whole bunch of money, and on the very first day, the truck is stolen. And there's this great scene where, you know, he's literally running after the guy in the truck, and he gets back down into town and from out of the Hollywood Hills, and he sees a policeman, and he's like, you just see in his face, it's completely wordless, but he's like, how can I report the theft of the truck? You know, I don't even legally own the truck. This is all done, you know,
under the table.
Off the books. So, and then he and his son begin a quest to find the truck, and things go on from there. And just wonderful film, very powerful. The boy is played by another actor. This is his first feature film, and he is just wonderful. I can't find his name at the moment, but A Better Life, one of the best movies I've seen this year, for certain. Probably, honestly, probably the best movie I've seen so far this year.
Very nice.
And I don't suppose anyone else has seen this one.
I was just nodding because it sounds good.
Boy, I can totally manipulate lot, you, can I?
You said Sam on it.
Seriously, I recommend it. And, you know, it's coming out. The people who aren't going to see Harry Potter are going to see Winnie the Pooh. So hopefully a few of them will peel off to go see A Better Life. And here's what we thought of that.
Yes!
All right. Well, you're listening to Film Sociology, a radio talk show here on WFYI HG to the Point. Temporarily repurposed as the Film Yap Radio.
Yeah.
We'll take a short break and we'll be back with The Video Store.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
The video store is open, and before we get into it, I want to take a moment to remind people that if you are not going to see Harry Potter or the Indianapolis International Film Festival. Mm-hmm. Boogie Nights is playing at the midnight showings at Landmark Keystone this weekend, and tonight at 9 at the IMA, it is one of the best movies ever. Clerks.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that is good.
I've seen Clerks.
You have seen Clerks?
I have seen Clerks.
Nice.
I've not seen Clerks 2.
Have you seen Mallrats?
No.
No, okay. You're doing okay.
Joe, we should also mention the Carmel is having a movie tonight, which we are sort of quasi-semi-sort of guest hosting.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that is tonight. Clear Sky, so we will be there. E.T. is the film of the night. I will be there. Sam will be there. Austin Luger will be there. Chris, you are moving into a new house and are unable to attend.
I will be painting and spackling this evening.
So we've already got an advantage over Chris for the night. We have tons, and I mean tons of stuff to give away. If you want to come out, it's at West Park.
Film Yap Swag.
Film Yap Swag, out the nose. So
yes.
Come take some of this stuff so I don't have to take it home with me, please. And it's good stuff, too. If you have kids, you'll love it. It's you know, we have lots of Disney movies and non-Disney movies and a couple of movies we don't want to watch anymore, but your kids might like them. You know, there's plenty of stuff. There's CDs, there's movies, there's games and posters and other things that I'm not thinking of right now. But we have to give it away. It must all go tonight, so... I'm giving it away whether you're there or not, so you
free
might as well take it.
Free stuff in Carmel.
That's right. So let's go to the video store, shall we?
Yes. Oh, I want to do one bit of trivia real quick. Who is the first credited star in E.T. the Extraterrestrial? Who's the first? It's like, you know, so if you're watching, you know, a movie with Harrison Ford, Harrison Ford's name almost always comes first. Who is the star officially of E.T. the Extraterrestrial?
Drew Barrymore?
No, I'm going to guess Dee Wallace.
Dee Wallace.
Yeah, yeah, that's Elliot's mother. I don't even know her character's name, but yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, of the Howling fame also.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But time to open the video store.
Yep, that's right. Well, hey, it's open when we're talking E.T.
Right.
and the Howling. So the first movie of opening this week, as you pointed out off air, Chris, actually hits the streets today. Animated film Johnny Depp. Isla Fisher, as Bianca so aptly noted to us off the air again. Animated film, Johnny Depp plays a lizard who escapes from his captivity and finds himself in the Old West of sorts. Let's have a listen.
Did you see that?
What do you think, Doc?
This hawk is dead.
Circle of life. Who exactly are you?
Name's Rango. What is this?
That there's Rango. He ain't afraid of none of you.
Is that right?
Take care of that for you. All better.
You see them, Mr. Rango? People have to believe in something. Pick it up. Your destiny awaits.
You are going to save us, aren't you?
Count on it, little sister.
Sheriff, we got a problem.
This is my town.
They done taken everything we got.
So you want something to believe in? Believe in that there sign. For as long as it hangs there, we got hope. Whatever you do, do not look down.
Whoa!
All right, now listen. I'm going to give you fellas one last chance to reconsider.
Make your move.
Hold on. Don't worry. I got a plan.
Help! Open the door!
Okay, plan B.
All right, there's Rango. I really enjoyed this. I think a lot of us did. I don't think it made a terribly large amount of money.
It did okay. I think it made about low hundred millions mm-hmm. here, and like about the same overseas. So yeah. Overall, it's probably gonna be a profitable film, but you know, not a runaway hit. What you would call a minor hit.
Yeah.
I thought it was the best animated movie I've seen so far this year.
Yeah.
Certainly heads and shoulders above like Rio.
Or
that. It really is. You know, so many films are kiddie films, animated films. Are just they're like Winnie the Pooh. They're made for kids, mm-hmm. and if you count your age in double digits, mm-hmm. you're not gonna like it,
yeah.
Or you're just not gonna be engaged by it.
Yeah.
And this movie was really made, I think, more for adults than for children. A lot of the humor is very highbrow. Lots of references to other movies.
Yeah.
There's the whole scene there where he goes into town and there's an old turtle who's running the show. I think he's voiced by Ned Beatty.
Oh yeah.
Who also did the voice for the Big Bear in Toy Story 3 last year. It's just a wonderful pastiche of styles. There's a whole bunch of a bunch of surrealist images and a couple of surrealist sequences in it, straight out of Louis Buñuel type of stuff.
Yeah.
And I just really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. It was very good. It was very strong. I would say it's appropriate for kids, but it's a little scary. My 6-year-old got a little scared. There's a rattlesnake character who's a little scary toward the end. Very exciting scene where he kind of comes in, but and there might be some parts that are a little slow for him, but it's very like you said, very entertaining. It's got some great gags in it, and a appearance by a sort of a Clint Eastwood-esque character voiced by Timothy Olyphant. Just absolutely, that was the highlight of the movie to me. I did not know it was Timothy Olyphant. I thought, oh, that's cool. They actually got Clint Eastwood to come in and do the voice.
Yeah.
And then I watched the credits, and it was not Clint Eastwood. So great impression. So,
all right. So we thought quite a bit of that film.
Now that was a good movie.
Then we have The Lincoln Lawyer, which is a drama starring Matthew McConaughey, and I don't think anyone here saw it.
Nope.
So it's a legal drama, and it stars Matthew McConaughey. And
is it a John Grisham book?
Does it star his abs?
Yes, I was gonna say. Does he take his shirt off at some point in the movie?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
because
emerges from the shower. I'm sure. Yeah, I think he's contractually obligated to do that in every film he does.
Yep. Well, anyway, Lincoln Lawyer out. Also coming out on video today is Arthur, the remake of the 1981 Dudley Moore movie, which completely and utterly bombed at the box office, and I really liked it a lot.
I saw it. I didn't like it, but I also don't like that
Russell
guy.
Brand.
Yes.
That guy. Yeah.
See, I liked it for just that reason, is that we've seen Russell Brand, in a few film roles, playing some variation on the Russell Brand persona of the hedonistic, you know, hard partying guy. Mm. And here we had a guy who, you know, on the externally, he has that, you know, and he's a rich partying guy, but you know, inside he's really a sweet guy and innocent and naive. So it was a very interesting take, something I hadn't seen before, and I enjoyed it. Unfortunately, unlike the 99% of other people who didn't go see it.
Yeah, and that includes me. I do have that at home. I have not been able to watch. I watched about the first 5 minutes of it and got pulled away, but saw some of the highlight for me, him dressing up as Batman and Louis Guzman as Robin in the too tight Robin outfit.
Yeah.
And they barreled down the street in the, I believe it was the Batman Forever Batmobile.
Yes.
Nerd!
Yeah, that's right. Robin wasn't wearing the Chris O'Donnell. Robin was not in the Chris O'Donnell Robin. He's more of the Burt Ward Robin.
Yes. Co-starring indie queen Greta Gerwig. Like whenever Hollywood wants to bring in like a little indie cred, they bring in Greta Gerwig. Yeah,
she's the Parker Posey of the
But and I think in terms of celebrity deaths for the week, I think we just had one minor name that Joe, you were gonna.
Robert Blossom. He was, I think, best known to most of us as the old man in Home Alone, which
snow shoveling neighbor.
Yeah.
It's the South Bend shovel slayer.
Oh yeah. I actually just watched that recently. I showed my kids that recently, and they loved it. And they were frightened to death by him until the end. And I said, "Look, he wasn't mean. He was a nice old man." Oh. That doesn't mean you go talk to any old man that comes walking across your path.
But still, he had a nice long film career, and we, as in Matthew's tradition, we raise a glass to his memory.
Absolutely.
Maybe we'll take our last couple of minutes here just to talk about, you know, things going on in the film app and shamelessly plug ourselves. Next week, of course, is Captain America, the First Avenger, and we have got tickets for it that we're giving away.
Yep.
So if you're in that mood, you should go to the film app and sign up for our contest.
Yep, and a little secret, if you come to Carmel tonight, I might have a few of those to give away, and a few about... for a movie about some other blue creatures that are a little smaller than Captain America. So if you have kids and want to see that, which is the only reason you want to see that second movie, come on up.
Have you seen it already?
I have not seen it already, but I have a pretty good idea of where it's going. It's going to New York City, and that's enough for me.
We got some other great things going on in the film app. Sam, I believe you're actually going to have a commentary up early next week about movie posters. Can you give us just a quick glimpse of into your mind about what that's going to be about?
Sure. I'll be writing about the Dark Knight Rises poster,
nice.
Which was recently revealed and flooded the internet with traffic, I'm sure. For those of you
what?
Who...
And the trailer is supposed to be forthcoming with Harry Potter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. You might have to go see Harry Potter again.
Yeah.
And for those of you who haven't seen the poster, it's just this stark image of a crumbling Gotham City, and Gotham City looks like it's sort of being reconstructed, kind of like the Batman film series itself. So I'll just be writing about that, and also I'll have a review of The Trip, which is a road trip buddy movie with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. It's kind of a fancy British comedy. Mm-hmm. So
I saw the trailer for that last night. We went to see Midnight in Paris, and the trailer was up. It looks pretty funny.
What did you think of Midnight in Paris?
I liked it a lot. My wife, not so much, but I enjoyed it. It was a nice little trip. So love the guy who played Hemingway.
All right. Well, that's the show for this week. The Film Yap Radio, otherwise known as Film Sociology, a radio talk show on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm Christopher Lloyd. You've been here with the Film Yap crew, Joe Shearer. We want to thank our guests, Sam Watermeyer and girlfriend Bianca.
Thanks, girlfriend Bianca. Thanks, Sam.
You're welcome.
So I believe Matthew is going to be back next week. And then the Film Yap Radio will be on again for a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
It's a summer of fun. But until then,
Kobe, watch your movies before the next time we come.
Yes, so we need to know what is Kobe watching.
Yeah, Creepshow. All right, Chris, go ahead. Let's close this sucker out. Go.
We're goodbye. We're closed.
Let me go.